Welcome to the Apria podcast, Investing in Asian Real Assets. The theme of the series is Resurgence of REITs in Asia Pacific, featuring REITs CEOs highlighting markets' opportunities, strategies, and their professional journey. In this episode, journalist Mark Cooper speaks with Justina Chu, the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director of Fortune REIT. Justina shares her career journey as she joined Fortune REIT, the first REIT to hold Hong Kong assets when it was listed in Singapore right after SARS in 2003. She also shares how her all-rounded experiences from different roles within the company laid the foundation for her in leading the REIT. Operating 3 million square feet of private housing estate retail properties, Justina highlights Fortune Malls' commitment in serving the neighborhood community and showcases various initiatives in driving a business that can thrive and be sustainable for a long term. Fortune REIT holds 16 neighborhood malls in Hong Kong and is currently listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange as one of the most actively traded REITs.
This is Mark Cooper with the Apria podcast. Today I'm talking to Justina Chu, who is Chief Executive of Hong Kong's Fortune REIT. Hello, Justina.
Hello. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. I thought we'd start with just a little bit about yourself, as we tend to do in these interviews. So you've had different roles in your time at Fortune REIT. You didn't start out as CEO. Can you tell us a bit about how your role has developed and what you did before moving into your current role?
Sure. I started my career with the finance department of ARA Asset Management, which is the manager of Fortune REIT back in 2003. At that time, it was just after SARS. Fortune REIT was listed on the Singapore Stock Exchange in August 2003, and I joined the company a month after. At that time, we only had a small team with three members in Hong Kong and then also three members in Singapore. And because we were a small team, although I was just working in the finance department, I was also given exposure to other parts of the business, including investment and asset management. All my supervisors were very generous about sharing their knowledge and experience with me. A lot of it is still very useful and practical to my career today. Took a break from ARA and Fortune REIT to finish my law studies and return to the company back in 2008. It has been around 13 years since I rejoined ARA, and I've enjoyed every moment of it. I'm most grateful that my professional training in accounting, finance, law, and surveying have fitted me very well in this job. Before I became the CEO in 2015, I have been in charge of different roles, including asset management, acquisitions, compliance, and investor relations. The experience that I gathered from carrying different roles in leading different projects has actually led a very solid foundation for me as a CEO. I believe that this is actually a very unique culture in ARA. People here love to learn and challenge themselves, going out of the comfort zone to try different things, and the company actually provides a lot of opportunities for colleagues to do so. Many of our top management today has worked here for a long time, but in various departments or various roles, and I think this culture is one of the key factors which led to ARA's success today. I myself am very fortunate to be part of its successful journey of the Fortune REIT, from being the first REIT with Hong Kong assets to now one of the most actively traded REITs in Hong Kong.
Okay, yes. I should point out that the Fortune REIT is part of ARA Group, based in Singapore. Now, you mentioned that you started out in 2003 with a very, very small team at Fortune REIT. So how has that expanded, and what sort of size team do you have today? And I wonder, do you tend to keep everything in-house in terms of property management, et cetera, or do you outsource?
I think, as you explained, Fortune REIT is actually an externally managed REIT, managed by the ARA Group. The group itself actually manages six REITs across the region, and Fortune REIT is one of them. Fortune REIT itself holds 16 Hong Kong retail shopping malls as of today. I think within the ARA, there are separate teams to exclusively manage different REITs. For instance, in the Fortune REIT team, we have a size of around 20 people covering a few key divisions such as finance, investor relations, asset management, legal and compliance, and also promotions. I think we sort of keep everything in-house, but then we actually, for the day-to-day operation of the shopping malls, we actually delegated it to one of the subsidiaries of Cheung Kong Group, who is very experienced in property management, and they do their day-to-day leasing and property management for us.
And with the in-house team, what's your personal management style? Are you kind of an autocrat or inclusive, or are you a controller or a delegator?
Well, I think everyone here sort of works as a partnership. I think teamwork is very important in our team because we don't have a very big team and everybody sort of have their own expertise. So we have a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions, and you know we take everybody's ideas very seriously. So we all just work as a team and then move forward in a united way.
Okay. So Fortune REIT owns a portfolio of retail properties in Hong Kong. Tell us a bit about the environment, because it's been challenging for retail in recent years. We've had the growth of online retail, social unrest in Hong Kong, and now the pandemic has challenges. Tell us a bit about how you've dealt with these changing trends and if your approach has changed at all.
Fortune REIT was listed back in 2003. It is actually the first REIT to hold Hong Kong assets with an initial portfolio of 5 assets and now with 16 neighborhood malls. I think our strength is that we are very close to the neighborhood. So a lot of the tenants in our shopping malls are actually necessity goods. So that tends to do well, even during good times and bad times. I think we have always enjoyed stable occupancy and positive growth for 16 years up to 2019. I think year 2020 was a challenging year even for us, where negative rental reversion has hit our portfolio for the first time. Occupancy, however, tend to be quite stable. We still achieve a occupancy of 95.8% at the end of the year, with a very high tenant retention rate of 84%. This is actually one of the highest in our operating history. Most importantly, our bad debt and rental arrears remain in healthy condition, with an overall rental collection rate of close to 99%. Comparing to other discretionary mall or tourist mall, we were not so much affected by the drop in turnover rent as a result of our high base rent model and a more resilient trade mix. We have 10% in supermarket, with 10% of our trade mix in household products, pharmacies, community services, etc., and also around 10% in banking. I think going into 2021, we remain very flexible in our leasing strategy. We have around one-third of the portfolio expiring, and with the near-term market sentiment remaining uncertain, we'll continue to adopt a flexible leasing strategy with an aim to keep a stable and high occupancy. We welcome pop-up stores that bring vibrancy and excitement to our malls, but do not expect short-term leases or leases solely on turnover rent to become a key trend in our portfolio. In terms of e-commerce itself, how it is impacting, our type of business, I think, there's no doubt that, online penetration has been increasing throughout the years. I think if we look at the government statistics, just in Hong Kong itself, online shopping has increased from low single digit to around 7% in January 2021. So this is a trend that we are also closely monitoring. However, we think that for Hong Kong itself, the threat to online disruption to offline retail is not new. But some of the advantages or some of the reasons why we still think shopping malls are here to stay due to a few reasons. For Hong Kong, small apartments itself do not allow storage of bulk online purchases. So because our flats are so small, we can't really, it's not like where you live in, the States or you live in Europe with big flats and then you can actually store up a lot of the grocery goods. And secondly, in Hong Kong, I think the employment of domestic helpers, a lot of people actually have domestic helpers. So they're actually used to fresh foods. So we think that, supermarkets will continue to do well in Hong Kong. And thirdly, the warm and humid weather in Asia means that malls offer comfortable leisure space for people to interact and spend spare time. Yeah, because sometimes you just have to turn on the aircon in Hong Kong during the summer. So instead of turning on your own aircon the whole day, a lot of people actually they actually spend parts of their day at the shopping malls doing shopping or having fun there. And lastly, I think eating out is a culture in Asia. I think, during festive seasons in Hong Kong, a lot of times, people, like Christmas, people actually come out together. Whereas maybe in US or Europe, people actually go to other people's houses or go to their family's home for dinner and celebrations. So I think with all these points, we think that Although online penetration or online shopping is affecting the offline retail, but I think not so much so in Hong Kong.
And do you mentioned F&B and the sort of the social role of malls. Do you have a growing proportion of F&B in your shopping centres?
Sure. I think there is always we're always looking for more spaces that can cater for F&B tenants. I think for our portfolio itself, we are keeping around 25% of the trade mix in F&B. But whenever we do asset enhancements, we try to increase that, by 5 to 10%.
Now, asset enhancements, I know you've got kind of ongoing programs to enhance the portfolio. Can you tell us a bit about that work and maybe talk about one or two particularly successful initiatives?
Sure. I think besides the proactive leasing management that we just talked about, AEI Asset Enhancement Initiatives is also one of the core strategy of Fortune REIT. I think we have we started our asset enhancement programs in 2009, so that has been happening for almost 12 years, and we have achieved quite good results so far. Our first project back in 2009-2010 was at Fortune City 1, which is our largest property. That mall itself is made up of two commercial podiums and a wet market. So the first phase of the renovation was to actually combine. We used to have like two supermarkets each side of the commercial podium. So we sort of merged that into a bigger supermarket with more diverse offerings, and then we relay out the space to improve the return of Fortune City 1 Plus. So I think there we spent around 6 months during the renovation, and with an investment of around 30 million, the return on investments exceeded 20%. And then throughout 2011 to 2012, we actually did the renovation on the bigger side. Now with the supermarket sort of moved to the Fortune City 1 Plus side, we actually did a big renovation on the main block, which is the Fortune City 1. So the mall after the renovation now offers a more attractive retail experience with a relaxing new central park called the Fortune City 1 Piazza, which features a more efficient layout and zoning. With an investment of approximately 100 million there, the ROI for the project was over 25%. And then lastly, once both podiums were done, the final phase was to upgrade the wet market, because the wet market has been around for over 20 years and it's sort of a bit run down. I think the occupancy before the renovation was around just less than 70%, but after the renovation, we managed to now lease it up to 100%, and with a ROI of also over 25%. Yeah, so this was actually the project that we started with around 12, 13 years ago. I think looking at present, we are actually doing AEIs at Plus Wu, which is a property that we bought back in 2013. So Plus Wu has always been generating good growth ever since the acquisition. Last year, or in 2019, 2020, we have actually completed the AEIs for phase one of Plus Wu with a return of over 10%. And going into 2021, we're now planning to roll out the AEIs for phase two of Plus Wu with a bigger floor area and a better location. We're going to reposition phase two with a lifestyle and entertainment focus. For example, like outdoor kids zone, lifestyle cafe, interactive screen and visuals, etc. We have budgeted a capex of 300 million and will be carried out in phases in the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay, interesting. I noticed that you seem to kind of be spending more as time goes on. Is that inflation, or are you kind of looking at more ambitious repositioning projects?
Yeah, I guess because in the past few years, the retail environment has actually changed a lot. And we think that in order for us to stay relevant, I think we actually need to spend more efforts on asset enhancement. And I think that has yielded pretty good returns for us.
I just want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, and that was pop-up stores. Could you just tell me a little bit about what you've been doing in that regard?
I think for pop-up stores, we have been filling up some of the vacant spaces in our shopping malls with something interesting, something trendy, and something that is very, very short term. But so far, I think the responses has been pretty good. A lot of the tenants actually come back to extend their leases, or they come back to rent a permanent space for us later on. So besides just putting seasonal or festive things there, I think it's also a good platform for new tenants to try out the demand within the community, within our shoppers.
And do they tend to be different kind of stores than you would normally run, or are they in similar lines to retailers that are already in the malls?
Usually they would be something different, something more, maybe more on the discretionary side, like more retail or more entertainment based. Whereas our existing tenants are more like necessity based, or they have been here for a long time.
Now, obviously, housing estate retail like yours has a very strong community role. Can you talk about how important that is? And also, I'd like to know, does this ever conflict with the bottom line? Do you have conflicting demands from the community and from your unit holders?
I think, as you mentioned, because we're actually running private housing estate retail properties that are very close to our residents and our shoppers nearby, we're actually very committed and very close to the communities that we're serving, and we try to meet the needs of different stakeholders. Our business objective really is to serve the needs of our shoppers, provide a favorable business environment to our tenants, and deliver sustainable return to our investors. But I believe that there are no conflicts in achieving all of them. Rather, we believe that doing business sustainably ensures longevity and creates long-term value for Fortune REIT. As a prominent property brand, we also recognize our influence towards creating a positive impact by developing and fostering community bonding. Fortune REIT actually provides shopping and entertainment destinations where members of the community can come together and interact. We take pride to position Fortune REIT as a responsible corporate citizen, serving local communities, which is receptive to their needs and enhancing the dynamics of how people live and shop. With this in mind, we also incorporate the community concept in our AEIs, asset enhancement initiatives. One of the key milestones was the completion of our AEIs at Plus Wu Phase 1, which was completed in 2019. This leading mall in Tin Shui Wai is now equipped with enhanced facilities such as barrier-free access, family toilets, baby care room, and repositioned under the new brand Plus Wu, offering our shoppers a nice and attractive rejuvenated shopping experience.
And do you have any community programs, or I suppose things that are kind of almost like charitable programs linked to the REIT?
Sure. We actually work with a lot of the, the charity, in our community. I think every year, but for last year, because of the COVID situation, we normally have over 150 sponsored events in our shopping malls for all the charities and the non-profit organizations. And for some of these, we also, get our volunteers in and help out as well. And besides this, we have also other types of programs targeting the elderly, the young generation, and also the environment.
Now, something you mentioned is about the acquisition, which is relatively unusual for Hong Kong REIT. So Fortune REIT's been acquiring assets and expanding. Tell us a bit about that and the scope for further expansion.
Besides proactive leasing management and asset enhancement initiatives that we talked about, doing new accretive acquisition is also one of our growth strategies. Fortune REIT is actually one of the most active in terms of acquisitions amongst the Hong Kong REITs. We started with 5 assets, and now we have 16 assets, and the AUM has actually grown around 11 times to now Hong Kong dollars 39.1 billion. I think in the past few years, interest rate has been on the uptrend, and cap rate of commercial properties in Hong Kong has been compressed to historical low. So in such an environment, the return was not very favorable for us to make any investments. But going into this year, 2021, we actually see increased market activities and also more favorable conditions on multiple fronts for investments. First of all, we see that there are actually more available stocks for sale in the market, and asking price has come down to a reasonable level. The removal of double stamp duty for commercial properties in Hong Kong will also likely increase market opportunities. The recent REIT code amendments, which allowed for the gearing limit to expand from 45% to now 50%, will also provide further flexibility to our investments. And with a currently low gearing of 22.4%, we believe that Fortune REIT is in a very good position to acquire via debt, with interest rate likely to stay low in the next few years. So I think all in all, for acquisition side, we remain positive on the long-term prospect of neighborhood malls in Hong Kong, and we'll remain as our investment focus in the near term. You know, with regards to expanding outside Hong Kong, we think the natural extension would be going to China. So we have actually gotten the mandate from our unit holders in 2018. So China is also one area that we're looking at the moment.
Ah, okay, interesting. Can you tell me more about what you've looked in China? Would you be, say, focused on the Greater Bay Area that's sort of, you know, more local to Hong Kong, or would you look further afield?
I think currently we are looking at the GBA area, the Greater Bay Area, and also first-tier cities in China. I think although Fortune REIT does not have the expertise in China yet, the ARA Group actually has made investment in China since 2008. So the ARA Group, actually has a very strong property management team in China. I think that lays a very solid base for us to actually consider to expand into China.
Right. Now, you did mention about the recent amendments to the Hong Kong REIT code. Can you tell me a bit more about those and what changes you think they'll make? And also tell us a bit about what differentiates Hong Kong REITs from others in Asia.
I think the recent amendments to the Hong Kong REIT code is basically four areas. The first one, which I think is most relevant to us, is the relaxation of the borrowing limit or the gearing limit from 45% to 50%. The other three amendments include now we're actually able to invest in minority-owned properties, because before that, the REIT code specifically say that we actually have to have majority control over the properties that we invest in. And thirdly, it's actually increasing the property development limit from 10% to above 10%. And also lastly is some requirements regarding the connected party transactions. I think overall we are quite supportive or very supportive of the proposed amendments. I think the amendments is really to make the REIT market more vibrant, and I think we actually welcome that. I think for the 50% borrowing limit, of course that is good for REIT managers because we think that actually 50% is actually not that high. Given that REITs are quite defensive, stable income generating vehicles, we believe that it would not be prudent for the borrowing limit to be very excessive, but 50% is generally quite acceptable by investors and by fund managers. And I think secondly, on the minority-owned properties, I think this would actually allow more flexibility for REITs to invest in commercial properties and would actually widen our investment scope. And also, REITs who are looking to, sort of expand overseas or expand into new markets, they will be able to better manage their risk by taking in minority positions, for example, in new markets with less capital outlay. So overall, I think we are very supportive of the latest REIT amendments. In terms of attracting new REITs to be listed in Hong Kong, I think the latest Hong Kong budget 2021 to 2022, actually there is a subsidy given for new listing of REITs in Hong Kong. The subsidy will cover 70% of the expenses paid to local professional service providers, subject to a cap of 8 million. I think, this is quite encouraging because the government is actually, doing new measures to drive new listings. And we think that, with more listings in Hong Kong, that would actually make the whole REIT market more vibrant. I think in terms of the comparison between Hong Kong and Singapore REITs, as you know, because Fortune REIT was, previously listed in Singapore, and then we did a dual listing in Hong Kong, and then now we're sort of just listed in Hong Kong. So I think in terms of comparing the two markets, I think the Singapore market, now there are more than 40 REITs in Singapore, and I think Singapore probably has a more diverse choice in terms of asset type and also geography. I think because in Singapore you have a lot more asset types, like you have retail, office, industrial, business park, logistics center, data center, hotel, and even healthcare, with footprint far beyond just Asia Pac, also include like Australia, US or Europe, etc. So I think, with the latest amendments to REIT code and, attracting new listings in Hong Kong, hopefully Hong Kong can also catch up and become more competitive as a REIT market as a whole.
Now, I noticed that last year, Fortune REIT got a first sustainability-linked loan. I know I'd be interested in talking a bit about ESG because it's become a big priority for institutional investors in real estate in recent years. And I think the pandemic has made ESG practices and standards come front and center for a lot of people in real estate. Could you tell us a bit about what Fortune REIT's doing in terms of sustainability, and also about what you think about ESG and the market in Asia overall.
Yes, indeed. ESG has become an important trend. On the disclosure side, today, most stock exchanges in the world, including the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, make ESG reporting mandatory for listed companies. However, with more institutional investors taking their investment consideration over ESG performance, companies are actually increasingly reporting ESG beyond the minimum statutory standards on a voluntary basis. For Fortune REIT, we have published a separate ESG report since 2017, disclosing our efforts and achievements on ESG. We have also set a five-year target of achieving a reduction in energy intensity against the baseline year of 2018. In light of all the disruption brought by the pandemic, we actually witnessed a great upswing in ESG transparency and collaboration from across the real asset industry. I think besides ESG reporting, what you mentioned, Fortune REIT also secured our maiden sustainability-linked loan in October 2020. For this loan, Fortune REIT will be eligible for interest rate savings upon achieving predetermined ESG targets, including GHG emission, like greenhouse gas emission, energy consumption, and also waste management. So you can see that not just institutional investors are emphasizing on ESG. We noticed that ESG is actually getting more attention from banks as well, as they're willing to offer more favorable interest costs to companies that put up efforts on ESG. Going forward for Fortune REIT, we will explore more opportunities to refinance our loan with green financing. In terms of making assets more sustainable, at Fortune REIT, we actively explore ways to contribute towards reducing greenhouse emissions. In our latest project to support alternative renewable energy solutions, we have rolled out a solar panel installation program at Fortune Malls. First project being Laguna Plaza, we are actually installing 550 pieces of solar panels on the rooftop of Laguna Plaza. It is expected to generate electricity of around 200,000 kilowatts each year, thereby reducing carbon emission by over 80 tons correspondingly. The installation program will be extending to other Fortune malls, with City One, our largest mall, next in the pipeline.
Is it, I often hear that it's more difficult for retail assets to be sustainable, because you obviously have lots of different tenants in separate units and a lot of customer flow through the shopping centres. What do you do to try and make your retail as sustainable as possible?
Of course, we first start from doing our own part. And I think in the past 2 to 3 years, we actually work very closely with our tenants to also make them aware of the sustainability program. We have actually inserted clauses in tenancy agreements, and also when we comment on their fitting out guidelines, etc., we will actually provide them feedbacks on sustainability and environmental measures. On the shopper side, I think at the moment we're working with nonprofit organizations to do a lot of coaching or a lot of training or seminars, which is done at the mall, to actually raise the awareness of the public for green initiatives. So right now, I think we can do more for shoppers, but at the moment, I think mainly it's on the education side. We hope to be able to actually encourage them to actually put what they have learned into work by encouraging them in different ways. Some of the initiatives we're thinking is sort of tied to our mobile app. For example, if they have done some environmental tasks, we might give them some free bonus points on our loyalty program, etc. So this is something in the planning at the moment.
And what would you say that Hong Kong itself needs to do as a city to become more sustainable?
I believe the Hong Kong government has been a strong advocate in promoting and turning Hong Kong into a sustainable and smart city. In particular, the Hong Kong 2030 Plus, developed by the planning department, has laid out the guide on town planning and infrastructure development in Hong Kong beyond 2030. It also covers the strategy for Hong Kong to be a smart, green and resilient city, where there are three areas that I think are relevant to us. The first one being land use. The Hong Kong 2030 Plus suggested three key strategies in promoting sustainable land use planning and urban design, including firstly, promoting comprehensive mixed-use development for better synergy. Second, integrate recreational and community farming into the built environment. And thirdly, bringing jobs closer to homes to reduce and shorten trips. I think in Hong Kong, we are living in place with scarce land resources. So apart from optimizing the usage of land, think we should also encourage putting in smart and green elements into new buildings. The second aspect being transport and mobility. I think as a world-class city, Hong Kong has an established public transport system. We can stretch that further by promoting a rail-based public transportation network with emphasis on green mobility. We can also enhance walkability, age-friendly pedestrian space, as well as easily accessible daily necessity and direct links to transport nodes. And lastly, an integrated infrastructure. Hong Kong will need to devise an integrated smart, green and resilient infrastructure system. Hong Kong has been developed since last century, where a lot of the infrastructure has been used for decades. It's time to put resources to retrofit the city's infrastructure with new technologies and to create synergy between different infrastructures such as drainage and also storm water retention facilities.
Okay. Let's turn to sort of the year ahead. What do you see as the biggest obstacles or challenges to generating returns in 2021 and in the post-COVID environment? And obviously, we hope that, you know, some of that post-COVID environment will occur in 2021. What are you expecting to face going forward this year?
Sure. I think despite the disruption from the pandemic, we actually see new opportunities to Fortune Malls with new retail dynamics. For example, there's a shift from destination shopping to local consumption. So we think that that would actually continue to support business at neighborhood malls. I think if you look at Hong Kong, with around 3 weeks from the relaxation of social distancing measures, places like game centers, building salons, cinema have all resumed their business. And we have already seen a good pickup in traffic to our malls, and F&B sector has been particularly busy. And also in the latest budget, the $5,000 electronic consumption voucher will likely to give a further boost to the local retail market. The consumption vouchers would come around summertime. So we also with more details to be disclosed on the voucher mechanism in the coming months, we are looking to implement targeted marketing campaign to capture such local spending. And then on the e-commerce itself, although on one hand it's actually disrupting the retail market, we are also looking. We're also constantly optimizing our portfolio mix and looking to introduce some of these elements into our malls. For example, we see that with the work from home and people caring more about their family and their community, we think that retail categories such as lifestyle brands, health related products, and affordable family-friendly retailers are beginning to have a stronger presence in the market. The sector was the key driving demand in 2020, while traditional fast fashion retailers are downsizing and consolidating their footprint. Secondly, we see that upmarket and niche grocery stores are expanding as people dine at home more frequently and display stronger demand for quality ingredients. Thirdly, we think that specialty retailers for outdoor activities and sporting goods will continue to open new stores as more people spend their leisure time outside. And lastly, more takeaway outlets and casual dining restaurants are opening as the sector continues subject to certain dine-in restrictions. So I think on the other hand, I think besides these new retail trades that we are seeing demand, Fortune Malls is also receiving demands driven by e-commerce, such as like HKTV Mall or SF Express. So neighborhood malls are viewed as a quick and good channel for them to expand their business.
Okay, interesting. Yes, so that's sort of bringing the logistics into the mall to make it a hub for collections and deliveries. Okay, maybe just to wrap up, we started off by talking about your career in real estate. Let's talk about other people. What advice would you give to somebody who desires a career in real estate, especially those who might be interested in working in the listed sector?
I think the most important attribute for success, be it real estate or any other industry, is passion. This is the driver that makes you excel in your career and keeps you motivated throughout your journey. With respect to working in the listed sector, I think it places greater responsibilities as you're not just working for yourself, but you're looking after the interests of your shareholders and investors. At ARA, in delivering investment management and related service to our clients, we aim to do so impactfully to the community at large and in partnership with all our stakeholders. ARA's four corporate values of REIT, R-E-I-T, which is the acronym for Respect, Excellence, Integrity, and Teamwork, has always been very close to my heart. Our company, ARA, currently manages around 120 billion of assets under different platforms, be it listed and unlisted REITs, private real estate equity, credit funds, infrastructure funds across 28 countries. Our diverse global workforce is united by the fundamental core values of respect, excellence, integrity, and teamwork. First of all, respect. We treat colleagues and business partners with respect, consideration, and dignity. We encourage and value the contributions of all and each of our employees as an essential stakeholder. Second is excellence. We strive for excellence, always aim to be number one, not just in financial performance, but also in every aspect of our business by maintaining high standards of performance and accountability. The third one being integrity, which I myself consider as the most important core values out of the four. This is a commitment to honor the trust placed on us, calls for us to be truthful at all times, and to uphold the highest standards of professional conduct. And lastly, teamwork. In our company, we support one another and build an environment that values teamwork and creativity. We inspire our team and our people to perform to their maximum potential. At ARA and Fortune REIT, we always put the investors' interests as our priority, and earning their trust is especially important to us. I believe that it is these four core values that differentiate ARA and Fortune REIT from other market players and made us so successful over the years.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. That's been very interesting, Justina. And thanks for sparing your time for us.
Thank you, Mark. Stay safe.
Thank you for tuning in to the Resurgence of REITs in Asia Pacific podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and we'll be back soon with more episodes featuring industry leaders and deal makers who specialize in REITs. If you like what you've heard and would like to give us feedback on future episodes, please do drop us a note on info@apria.asia. For more content and information, visit www.apria.asia or follow us on LinkedIn.